This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Democratic senators have requested a second confirmation hearing for Donald Trump's nominee for Secretary of Education. The Michigan billionaire Betsy DeVos stunned senators and the public when she answered questions during her first hearing about public education that suggested she knew little to nothing about the institution. Republicans have so far refused to allow another round of questioning. DeVos's background suggests that if the Senate were to confirm her, the stakes for American public education couldn't be higher. My guest is Kevin Kumashiro. He's the former dean of the University of San Francisco School of Education. He's a leading expert on educational policy, school reform, teacher preparation, and educational equity and social justice. He is the education correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Sonali, thanks so much for having me.
So let's first talk about the very first hearing that we didn't get a chance to discuss with you. But some of the statements that DeVos made were perplexing, to say the least. What stood out to you the most? What disturbed you the most as you were watching what many have characterized as a train wreck?
It really was a train wreck. And I think what was most disturbing to me was a lack of knowledge about either federal policies regarding public education or the role of the federal government in advocating for public schools. You know, she seemed to know nothing about the federal law, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. She seemed to be very unaware of how we hold states and schools accountable, and including institutions of higher education, regarding fraudulent use of federal funds. Her singular focus on using school choice as a lever to reform and improve public education is what I think rang most loudly as an outcome and why we should be so concerned. Public education is an incredibly complex and difficult situation to address, and to think that we can tackle it with just kind of one magic bullet is not only misguided, but is going to take us in a very destructive direction for public schools.
Now, she also seemed to have little understanding of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which requires public schools to provide free and appropriate education to all students with disabilities. This is a huge issue for parents of children who have special education needs. They are watching with trepidation. What is Betsy DeVos's position, if she has one, on this aspect, very crucial and important aspect of public education?
That's such a good question. And I think it ties in with what we should be asking, why we need another hearing session in the Senate. We should be asking questions about her positions on different populations of students that historically have struggled the most in public schools. And that includes students with disabilities. It includes other groups that have been targeted by Trump's rhetoric, such as, you know, registering and banning all Muslims, or deporting all undocumented immigrants, including young people. We know that the federal government, throughout the second half of the 20th century, played a really pivotal role in leveraging their position, leveraging federal funds, in order to push states and districts to comply with federal non-discrimination law. This is one of the central and most important roles, many would argue, that the federal government has played in public education. We can't be backing away from that right now. And some of the signs of where DeVos would stand or might stand, or I would say is likely to stand, on different populations can be seen in her track record on either what she personally has done or what the organizations whose boards she sits on has done. You know, she's on the board of a number of organizations, some of which, for example, have been very active on LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender issues, either with the banning of same-sex marriage or the promotion of so-called conversion therapy, right, to cure people from being gay. We've seen her on other Well, you know, some of the connections that we are talking about are connections with some of the organizations that she's on the board of, and their connections with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which develops model state legislation that advances the conservative agenda. And one of their areas to tackle is public education, such as attacking teacher tenure laws and such as weakening legislation like the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. There's a lot that we can see in her track record that needs to be brought up in the confirmation process.
Right. The other huge debate that has been taking place in education for many years that DeVos was questioned about and seemed to know very little about is the standardized testing and the use of students and the use of those tests to measure teacher abilities. Senator Al Franken, when he asked her about this, was surprised that she seemed to know very little about it. I mean, this has been one of the central debates. I'm not an educator. Expert, and I know, I mean, okay, I'm a journalist, but you know, most people who even aren't necessarily education experts but have just been paying attention to the issue of public education know about this debate.
It is one of the defining debates happening right now in public education. You could argue, in fact, that both sides of the political aisle, right, both Democrats and Republicans, have been so worked up over the past few years of the failure of the public education system to improve by relying on high-stakes testing. In other words, the failure of the testing regime to improve education has upset so many people across the political spectrum that that was actually one of the guiding principles when Congress reauthorized the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. There were a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, who were so unhappy about this fixation that we've had on high-stakes testing over the past decade that they made it a key goal of the reauthorization to weaken the federal government, because they blamed the Duncan administration for pushing so hard on high-stakes testing that they wanted to weaken the federal government in vis-a-vis states in terms of who has the authority to push for different kinds of reforms. It has been central in the public. It has been a central debate in Congress. It is very disturbing that she seemed unaware of what some of the central debates on student learning and the role of student assessment in driving education policy. It was very disturbing to see that she seemed so unfamiliar with that debate.
And the other debate that has been happening around public education, not directly related to education, is the presence of guns in schools and on school campuses. And of course, she towed the party line, the NRA line. How disturbing was that as well? Because I don't think we've ever necessarily had a Secretary of Education, at least in recent years, that has basically been a pro-NRA person.
It was disturbing to say that she wasn't willing to take a stand on the place of guns in schools and sort of made an offhanded comment that perhaps schools do need guns to protect themselves from grizzly bears, right? I think that, you know, what that conversation or even that comment raises to me is the importance of having a leader or having educational leaders who can connect the dots, who can see what is the relationship between school reform and other kinds of debates happening, whether it's on safety and gun control, whether it's on healthcare, whether it's on employment, whether it's on criminal justice. I mean, there's so many other things that are interconnected with schools. And this goes back to, by the way, my opening comment, which was that if all you do is try to tackle education by focusing on one slice of what schools are involved in, you're actually missing the bigger picture. It kind of goes back to this idea that it takes a village to raise a child. It really does when it comes to education. Take an entire system working together, schools working very tightly with other institutions and other constituents in our society. We need to be able to connect the dots, and we need leaders who can connect those dots as well.
Now, Kevin, the Democratic senators on the committee, the Senate Committee on Education, Health and Pensions, that is essentially supposed to be overseeing her nomination, they have requested a second hearing. Republicans have responded saying she has answered way more questions or been faced with way more questions than either of the previous secretaries of education under Obama had to endure. Of course, those people, despite what their politics were, had experience in public education, whereas Betsy DeVos seems to not have. She never went to public school herself. None of her children went to public school. She's never worked in public schools. She's never really been involved in the actual business of public schools and the actual nuts and bolts of this institution. However, Kevin, haven't Democrats themselves been hypocritical, if you will, on the issue, particularly of, say, charter schools and so-called school choice, some of these policies that DeVos represents? The Washington Post had an interesting article that basically said that the Democrats paved the way for her nomination.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a misguided argument on anyone's part to suggest that the rhetoric we're hearing from Trump and the track record that we see from DeVos regarding education are a radical departure from what we've seen over the past 30 years, 40 years actually even, from both Republican and Democratic administrations. That would be a misguided argument because, as you just pointed out, there's actually been a direction that our nation has been moving in that is very much about moving towards a narrow definition of standards and accountability, moving towards marketizing and privatizing the public education sector, moving towards expanding school choice and vouchers and charter schools. And this has been championed by both Republicans and Democrats. There's not something majorly different between DeVos's call to expand school choice, Trump's call to expand school choice, and what the Democratic administration has been doing over the past 8 years.
Right. I want to quote Valerie Strauss, who wrote this article in the Washington Post that I thought was very important. She said, by embracing many of the tenets of corporate reform, including the notion of school choice, quote unquote, and the targeting of teachers and their unions as being blind to the needs of children, they, meaning the Democrats, helped make DeVos's education views, once seen as extreme, seem less so. I mean, we really can't simply blame Republicans for this. It's very easy, I think, for many liberals to point fingers at Republicans who espouse maybe slightly more extreme versions of the same views that a lot of the Democratic lawmakers and administrations have espoused.
Absolutely. I think that there was so much debate within the education community when Obama was up for election for his second term, because a lot of educators who saw the destruction in public education in his first term were really saying, we're not voting for him because of his administration's work on education, but really in spite of it. And so I think it's important to kind of remind ourselves of the history of some of these reform initiatives. You know, the rhetoric is that choice is central to democratic kind of liberties. The rhetoric is that choice gets struggling parents out of struggling schools. Here's the reality. The reality is that when we look at where school choice has been implemented, especially places like Detroit, massive amounts of funding went into expanding school choice and lifting the regulations, lifting the oversight over charter schools. And what do we see has happened? We've actually seen a further decline, not an improvement, in the public school system in Detroit. And I was just writing this piece about kind of the history of some of these reform initiatives. You know, one of the times where in our nation we saw the loudest clamoring, the loudest call for school choice was actually in the midst of the desegregation movement, of the civil rights movement, when people were arguing that we shouldn't have mandatory desegregation, we should just implement school choice programs because that's going to naturally desegregate schools. And in the midst of the civil rights movement, we also saw really the emergence of the school voucher movement, which was all about diverting public funds to private and religious affiliated schools. And that was also not only a response to the nation's move to build up and invest in public education as a public good, it was also seen as a way to fling the doors open towards privatizing and even profiteering from public education. And let me just make one final point, which is regarding charter schools. Charter schools is often seen as a way to privatize. New Orleans, Philadelphia, Detroit, these are great examples of where, even though the rhetoric was about providing alternatives, and I'm not going to debate whether or not there's good charter schools. There's great charter schools out there, but my question isn't whether or not some charter schools are great. My question is whether or not moving towards a system that allows almost anyone to launch a charter school with very little oversight, such as in Detroit, whether that's actually going to improve the system and serve all children, or whether it will just benefit some, particularly those who already have means and resources. We need to be thinking about public education as serving all children, as serving our entire next generation, and creating a system where there are winners and losers just simply cannot do that.
Now, what has the response from teachers' unions been to Betsy DeVos, from parents, from even students themselves? Are we seeing loud and vocal protests from the American Federation of Teachers, for example?
You know, both unions, I think, have, but particularly the American Federation of Teachers, have come out and expressed grave concerns over DeVos. I know that the president, Randy Weingarten, has appeared on media talking about the concern with not only someone who has so little knowledge and expertise on public education issues, but also has a very narrow and singular kind of agenda. But I think where we see some of the more grassroots organizing happening is actually outside of the unions. It's in some of these wonderful kind of community and professional organizations. I think of places like the Network for Public Education, that has really tried to rally the public to speak out, right? They're trying to say the public needs to own this issue. The public needs to be informed. The public needs to be involved. And so it's calling on people to learn about the issues, figure out your position, and then voice your opinion to your lawmakers, regardless of what that position is. And I think that is such a helpful piece of advice and guidance right now. I think we've sat back, including those progressive, I identify as kind of on the progressive end of the political spectrum. Even those of us on the progressive end have not done enough to really think about what it means to build a larger movement to improve education. We were often involved in these small battles, right, to change this policy or that policy. A movement requires shifting the public consciousness. It requires engaging the public to act collectively on public issues. And that's what we need to be seeing much more of in this moment.
Now, Kevin, the Secretary for Education also, doesn't the Department of Education as a whole also tackle not just primary and secondary education, but higher education as well, right? And that's an issue we haven't gotten to. I know during the confirmation hearing, Senator Elizabeth Warren questioned Betsy DeVos about, for example, the fraud that's been perpetrated by for-profit universities with federal funds, universities like Trump University, and that Donald Trump basically had to settle on a major lawsuit against his university. And we've seen other so-called for-profit educational institutions that have really undermined the kinds of promises that they've made to, in particular, poor students looking for affordable higher education. How important is this issue when we think about DeVos?
You know, the issue of kind of oversight over public, over institutions of higher education, particularly regarding the fraudulent use of federal funds, connects to me to one of the criticisms that has been voiced about DeVos in the K-12 realm, which is that she has so championed the lifting of oversight of charter schools in places like Detroit. In both instances, what we're seeing is this message that we don't actually need to be holding institutions accountable, that really it should function more like a marketplace. And if you can draw consumers, then obviously you're doing something right. And I think that can be compelling. I mean, for some people, it's like, well, maybe we don't need the government to provide oversight because if they're doing a bad job, people won't go. We seem to buy into this narrative that if we can make education look like a marketplace, that's going to solve all of our problems. And I think that narrative itself is the problem. Public education should not be seen as merely a commodity where those who can afford can get the better resources, that some will win and some will lose. That's not how we should be thinking about public education. Public education should be thought of as a cornerstone of our democracy. It should be thought of as one of the central institutions that build up our democratic nation, which means we as a nation should be investing and really holding accountable in a really smart way all institutions from pre-K, like early childhood, all the way up to post-secondary, including colleges and universities. And let me just say one kind of side note on this. One of the reasons that I think it is attractive to some reformers to lift oversight and regulation is because doing so allows us to create a whole other tier of education. You know, we kind of already have this two-tier educational system, right? Really awesome schools for the elite and really substandard schools for the masses. Well, we're fueling that when we allow schools and universities to look as simplistic and problematic as they do. And one of the trends in education is to move away from promoting critical thinking, independent questioning, things like that, more to simply documenting whether or not you've learned this particular content area.
So right? That we can basically have a class, an underclass of people who are destined for the low-wage jobs to create the profits for corporations headed by the likes of Betsy DeVos.
Exactly. It's creating a whole new labor force that's meant for lower-tier roles. It's creating a whole new profiting industry that isn't about educating. It's actually just about certifying that you've met certain.
Right.
It's why some online universities allow you to get a degree in a matter of weeks or months because they're not actually helping you to kind of generate knowledge. They're just certifying that you've acquired certain skills and bits of knowledge.
Right. And that's the sort of broad issue at stake here whenever we have conversations about public education. Well, Kevin, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for covering this really vital issue.
My guest is Kevin Kumashiro. He's the former dean of the University of San Francisco's School of Education, a leading expert on educational policy, and also the education correspondent for this program. After the break, we'll continue coverage of the story by playing a short video from Brave New Films that explores DeVos's background in Michigan public schools. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.